Good morning. My name is Andrew Wilson. I represent the appellant, Mr. Youngs. Your Honors, prior to coming into court here, I had very few prepared remarks because I was going to rely primarily on our written submission. My prepared remarks were going to be limited to addressing Addendum 38 through 43, which is the record on which the district court relied on finding that Mr. Youngs was ineligible to pursue a statutory expungement in this matter. Just before court, I spoke with opposing counsel who informed me that the records that we look at as the public, as non-governmental attorneys, is different than the records that you and opposing counsel look at. I've been informed that there is a private, restricted register of actions that contains a sentencing provision that, if that sentencing provision was accurate, would preclude Mr. Youngs from pursuing an expungement. I have not seen that until this morning. I don't doubt that opposing counsel has provided something that she accurately received, but I think the issue is still the same, that there is no record of a basis for what that MNCIS register of actions states as the sentencing provision. There is no plea petition. There is no document in the record, specifically the record that the district court relied upon in finding that he was ineligible, to support the district court's factual conclusion that, in fact, he was not eligible.
Now, the burden, though, in the district court was on your client. You're correct on the fact question.
Your Honor, I think that there are two different inquiries here, and we briefed that there is a burden of production on the front end of an expungement simply to aver eligibility, and then a distinct burden of persuasion at the expungement hearing to justify the expungement factually on the merits. So the expungement petitioner under 609A has the burden to draft the petition, sign the petition, aver sufficient facts that would grant relief if proven to be true. The state then has the opportunity to object, the obligation to object if they believe that expungement is not appropriate. And then at the hearing, there is a 12-part test, it's non-exhaustive, that the district court considers. One of those 12 factors is the nature and severity of the underlying crime.
Mr. Wilson, can I go back to your first statement? I'm not sure I understand. Are you suggesting there's something the court looked at in making its decision that's not in the record that we look at? And if so, what relevance would that be to either our review or the district court's decision?
I agree with you, Your Honor. I don't think that there is relevance to it because we have the district court's record that it reviewed, and that's the Addendum 38, which is the email, through 43. It's the complaint, which I don't believe is something the court should consider.
Is the supposition, though, that something the court looked at that is not in the record says something more specific about the level of the conviction offense? The sentencing provision in particular we're referring to, which seems like the relevant one for expungement.
Yes, Your Honor. That is the supposition. I've reviewed the public MNCIS register of actions that simply contains an indication as to the crime of conviction, which there is no dispute about. We all agree that he's convicted of offering a forged check. The register of actions opposing counsel presented to me has both the crime of conviction and a sentencing provision. And it's a sentencing provision that aligns with the sentencing provision outlined in the complaint. But I believe the argument, even if that document is true, even if that's the record that you as the court look at in judging the validity of this argument, I don't think that that makes the respondent's argument any stronger, given that we have what the district court reviewed, and there's nothing in here indicating what the sentencing provision is.
That was my question. I assume we're limited to what the district court looked at, which is what we have. So it's really a non sequitur. Is that the whatever the judge may or may not have looked at doesn't matter. It's what the judge said the district court looked at, which is what we see in front of us.
I agree, Your Honor. I think this court's limited.
I'm always have trouble when we're reviewing a district court's review of a referee's order. The referee has a number of findings, one of which in particular I wanted to ask you about goes into the detail of the, well, I shouldn't say detail, a paragraph referring to the 12 factors. And just kind of summarize, I guess, is the best way I would describe it. And then the district court reviews that and says that's what the referee did, although suggested perhaps the referee didn't have to, because that goes to the issue you're talking about, whether there's an eligibility issue or not. Which do we review?
I'm requesting the court review the district court's order affirming the referee's findings, as opposed to the referee's findings. I believe the referee's findings were erroneous as well as to the merits of the expungement, but it's the district court that affirmed those findings, and so I'd request the court review order.
Would you agree if the court considered those 12 factors for which we would give deference to, that it renders moot the eligibility issue that you've raised because the referee and the district court affirmed actually considered those 12 factors? So in other words, even if you were eligible, the district court came to the conclusion, as did the referee, but you don't, the public safety outweighs the benefits to you per those 12 factors.
I don't think that's dispositive, Your Honor, for two reasons. Number one, again, the nature and severity of the crime, which is this loss amount, that's the nature and severity of the crime, was ostensibly the key factor that the district court and the referee found in balancing those 12 factors to be what pushed it over the edge to public safety outweighing the benefit to the appellant. The nature and severity of this crime, that is, if that in fact was the factor that pushed the district court over the edge, that was error, because it is an $1,100 difference between an offense that was expunged in the 2005 court file and the alleged loss amount in this court file. So it's $1,100, which is not a markedly greater amount of money than was actually lost in the court file that referee Tracy did expunge. It's only one of 12 factors. So even if that does weigh against expungement, other factors weigh in favor of expungement, including the length of time since the offense occurred, which was greater, and including input from the victim, who showed up to the expungement hearing and indicated we have no objection to an expungement. That was something that was not present when referee Tracy granted the expungement, but it was present here. And so there are two factors that weigh in favor of expungement, and even if that nature and severity of the underlying crime weighs against it, I think the district court erred in affirming the referee on that front.
Did either the court or referee make, I assume it was argued, that point that a year earlier he was considered rehabilitated, he being the individual, so that same individual coming before the court the following year no longer is rehabilitated. I'm using that paraphrase of those 12 factors. Isn't there some form of legal, if not factual, incoherency to that?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's the second point. It's this conflict between referee Reed's findings and referee Tracy's findings. So either one of those judges has to be wrong here. Referee Tracy found a year and a half earlier that he was sufficiently rehabilitated and that the benefit to the appellant outweighed the detriment to the public. So how a year and a half later does the balancing test just switch when two of the factors under the 12-part test now weigh in his favor to a greater extent than they did before? And that's the time since the offense occurred and the fact that the victims have shown up at the hearing and said, we do not object. It's corporate counsel for Office Depot saying, we do not have any objection to an expungement being granted. And under 609A, that factor must be considered by the district court. So what exactly has changed between the 2019 expungement petition that was granted for a very similar crime, the only difference of which is that it was $1,100 less, and what happened in 2021? The other issue, in terms of the nature and severity of the crime, is that the crime to which we are trying to get expunged now was an offering a forged check. The crime that was expunged was an offense where he actually obtained the property. So factually, this is a less severe offense. He didn't actually obtain any property. He offered a forged check in an attempt to when he was caught. If he had obtained the property, then it's essentially the same crime that was expunged by referee Tracy in 2019, but he didn't actually obtain it. So factually, it's not as severe.
Is there some significance to the fact that the what we do have in the record, the commitment document that shows a guilty plea to count one, and it was only one count, as I understand it, and now it cites the statute without the subdivisions, and that's the point that you're raising. And we do have the complaint with the one count, which you would agree, and do agree, that everyone agrees, that charge would if one was convicted of it, makes one ineligible because of the sentencing subdivision.
I would agree.
So is that sufficient evidence for a judge or referee to rely on that commitment document that says count one, even though it doesn't say the subdivision?
No, Your Honor. I agree that if there was evidence as to the sentencing provision he was actually sentenced to, and it aligned with the complaint, he's not eligible for expungement. Absolutely agree with that. But this court's repeatedly held that reliance on something that is not proven is error for a district court in the context of an expungement. There's ASR, there's State versus DKZ, and then there's the concurrence, the language of Judge Schumacher's concurrence in State versus ASJ. The complaint is not proven. Plea negotiations happen all the time, and defense attorneys focus largely in terms of future consequences. Can this be expunged in the future? Will this be expunged in the future? What's the presumption for pursuing an expungement in the future? And so relying on a complaint, which is an allegation signed ex parte by a judge, is improper, and this court's already held that repeatedly in published cases. But again, if there was evidence in the record proving the sentencing provision that was applied to Mr. Youngs, then absolutely he's not eligible for expungement. And that's the whole point of this case, is that we've been trying to find a basis, and until this morning we've been presented with no evidence indicating what the sentencing provision was here, except for opposing counsel's representations that there's a restricted version of MNSIS that we don't have access to, despite making data practices requests, despite asking the judge in Hennepin County District Court to unseal records, despite contacting the records department at Hennepin County. And these are things that he did before retaining me. So he's been attempting to find this basis for years, and he's been told repeatedly, going through the court process, nothing. There's no records there. This is the limit to what the district court reviewed, A38 to A43. And so until this morning, we've been presented with no evidence indicating that he's not eligible.
Can I throw a monkey wrench in? It's an issue not discussed by the parties, but the 609-631 includes check forgery of $2,500 or less. It doesn't say offering a forged check, but check forgery, which this statute seems to distinguish between subdivision 2 and subdivision 3. Does the fact that your client pleaded guilty, and we know that he pleaded guilty to offering a forged check as opposed to check forgery, render him ineligible, the offense ineligible for expungement? And if not, why not?
No. But I think that's part of the problem, Your Honor, is that we don't have, for example, if we had the plea colloquy from the actual sentencing provision, not sentencing, from the sentencing hearing, the plea colloquy would indicate what exactly he pled guilty to. I think, ironically, for the purpose of answering that question, I think reviewing the complaint is informative, not relying exclusively on the complaint, but reviewing the complaint because this was charged as an offering a forged check case, as opposed to check forgery. But I don't have an answer for you because there aren't sufficient records that I could rely on in providing that answer.
Are you conceding that offering a forged check would not be an eligible offense?
Offering a forged check would, dependent upon the loss amount and the applicable sentencing provision. So if he were, in fact, convicted of check forgery and sentenced under the sentencing provision for $2,500 or more, then he would not be eligible for expungement. But even with check forgery.
That because, just to clarify, I think you raised this point in your brief, that some of the, on the list, on the expungement list, sometimes the elements of the element portion of the crime is identified, but in this particular case, it's because subdivision 4, a sentencing provision, which applies to either offering forged check or forgery, check forgery, are covered.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So that's why the critical issue here is not whether it was offering, but whether it was sentenced under subdivision 4, A or B.
4-2.
Okay.
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor.
That's the part that's missing in the record because the sentencing, and this I think is undisputed, there is no record before the court or before us that indicates the subdivision 4 sentencing level?
Yes.
And that's because also apparently Hennepin County purged plea agreements as well as transcripts?
Plea petitions, Your Honor. I'm not sure if purged is the right word, but what I was informed is that the record may not have been scanned in when the court went from paper to paperless.
Mr. Wilson, do you agree that, I'm looking at the warrant of commitment, the second to last page of your addendum. There's a, the offense is described as offering a forged check, and the statute is indicated 609.631-3. Does that, to you, mean subdivision 3 of that section?
I see I'm out of time. May I respond?
Yes, you may respond.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
That's my read of that.
Thank you.
And you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal, of course.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent, you may approach, identify yourself, and you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Jean Burdorf, and I am an assistant Hennepin County attorney, and I represent the state of Minnesota. Our legal position is stated in the letter that I submitted to the court, which is we believe that the certified copy of MYC's conviction is conclusive proof that he was convicted of offering a forged check over $2,500, and that the expungement proceeding was not the appropriate venue to challenge that.
Certified copy of what?
The Register of Actions, that is the case disposition that the district court references in its order.
Is that what we have in the record that shows the commitment document?
I don't think the district court actually, so perhaps I can help a little bit with the record issue in this particular case. First of all, and I probably miscommunicated this to Mr. Wilson when we were in the attorney room talking about the Register of Actions or case disposition form I have. I looked it up on my to show him how I got the Register of Actions, which I will show you. I have a copy of it. I used my own personal account to look it up. That is a private database. In this case, when Ms. Elnagny, who's the lawyer who represented the state in the expungement proceedings, what she did to get a copy of the case disposition or Register of Actions, that document, she went down to the 11th floor of the Hennepin County Courthouse and got a certified copy of the conviction. What we get in Hennepin County is this document. It is called the Register of Actions. We also refer to it as the case disposition or just the register.
I'm having a hard time understanding. It's not the record before us, and it's not identified in an order. So, what relevance would that be to us? I don't think there was even a reference by a referee or a judge finding some other document, which would.
Right, Ms. Elnagny, when she submitted her letter to the court, which we are relying on, she said, "Please go look at the register. Go look at what is the public record of this conviction." I don't think she submitted a separate copy.
But wouldn't a judge, I'm just trying to understand in a, any civil proceeding, which this is more like civil proceeding as an expungement, could someone send a letter to the court after a hearing and say, by the way, go look at something that wasn't offered at the hearing I didn't attend, and then that would be considered by the judge and then part of the record for our review?
Well, I do think the district court and the referee both considered Ms. Elnagny's letter. What she did in the letter is she said, please go look at the certified copy of this conviction, which is what she did. She went to get the certified copy.
From a different angle, be more direct. Would you agree the record does not indicate the level of conviction offense for which he pled guilty to?
I do not, because I believe that the court, and maybe we're splitting hairs and I'm not understanding, so I'll explain it hopefully in a way that answers your question, and if I don't, please ask me to try again. We don't ordinarily, if we say to a district court, please look at the record, go look at the case and look at the Register of Actions, we don't usually then also submit a copy to the district court of its own judicial record, because we are sort of operating under the assumption that the judge here is going to be able to take judicial notice of the Register of Actions in the case that's being litigated.
But would you agree when a judge doesn't take judicial notice, then it's not part of the record, so it's not relevant to our review?
Well, I think the judge in this particular case and the referee did look at the Register of Actions, because when they're talking about what the case disposition is, they're looking at this register of actions. Okay, that said, this court, I think, also can take judicial notice of the register of actions in this case, because it is actually the, it is the judgment of conviction in this case is part of the record. That's where I got it. I went to the case in MGA, and I pulled the register of actions out of the court record.
The position is, if I understand it right, whether it's a document that was produced, it is, in fact, in the record.
It is in the record because it is the it is the document that demonstrates what the conviction is in this case. So
it strikes me, Mr. Wilson's clients over the years spent a lot of money and legal fees and so forth, that the last time around, if this was a common practice, he wouldn't have hired Mr. Wilson this time on this one, I assume, because he would have seen a register of action. Oh, okay, now I see what I'm...
I'm just at
a little bit of a loss on the procedure and the relevance.
And just to put a finer point on it, it wasn't just in the last action. This is the third time, if I understand it right, that this issue has come up in the district court where what you've indicated to opposing counsel, mm-hmm. I gather today, for the first time, could have been provided as a matter of procedure quite some time ago.
And I think what has happened each time again is that the attorney that has represented the state of Minnesota has said, please go get the district court record. I can't speak to what the public, why the public MNSIS database doesn't indicate the sentencing provision, but if you go to our courthouse, if you go to the custodian of this judicial record and you ask them for a certified copy of this conviction, they will give you a certified document that indicates that he was convicted of offering a forged check under subdivision 609631, subdivision 3, and they will give you a document that says he was sentenced under the sentencing provision for offering a forged check over $2,500. So that is part of the district court's record in this case. For instance, if we wanted to impeach someone with this conviction, we would go to the district court, and certainly we have an advantage because I work in the same building with the record holder. We would go and get a certified copy of this record, and we would get a certified copy of the document I held up and showed you, which contains the sentencing provision.
Isn't that what should have happened here but didn't? In other words, my understanding is the state didn't appear, but the state would come with a certified copy to respond to the petition, and now you've got the evidence issue that counsel's pointing out didn't happen, is we affirm under oath and with some sworn testimony, I don't recall, at these hearings, but and the court looks at this, well, it's true, we don't see which subdivision, so you seem to be, I have no basis to find ineligibility, and your sworn petition suggests that you are eligible, and then the state's counsel, but Your Honor, we have the certified copy received, now issue's done.
And I think for example, in the case I gave you, which is we would get a certified copy to impeach somebody, that would be in a different court file, potentially in a different county, often in a different county. And we present that because the district court doesn't have access to the judicial record in the case we want to use for impeachment purposes. It makes quite a bit of sense to me that we would have a separate document in that context. In this case, what our lawyer said to the district court is, please look at your own record in this case that we're litigating. And you can see when you look at this district court record that our judges have access to and our referees have access to, you can see that he was sentenced for offering a forged check over $2,500.
Ms. Burdorf, what about the letter in the addendum, the letter from the judge's law clerk to Mr. Wilson, which says, attached are the requested documents reviewed mm-hmm. by the court. And then it includes three, but not the item that you have in your hand, right?
And I think the explanation for that is exactly what I just described, which is the district court, when they open their computer or look at the district court file, they are looking at the record in that case, and they're looking at it. The referee and the judge both reference the case disposition. That is what the register of actions is. It's when we click through it in our MGA accounts, we click on that button to get the case disposition. So when the...
But I guess to accept your argument, we have to disregard this letter, I guess, or we have to not take it literally when it says, here are the documents reviewed by the court.
Right.
You want us to add to...
I'm not actually asking you to add. I think what the court is saying is, these are the physical documents that I was given and looked at. I think the court also can look at its own file, even if that is not attached as an exhibit, to make a determination about what the conviction level is in this case.
In your position that the referee in the district court making reference to the case disposition was referring to this registry?
That is what I'm imagining, because the case disposition is part of the registry. So when I read those orders, I assumed that they both indicated they looked at the case disposition, they were talking about the MGA case disposition. I don't want to get too bogged down in this because
Before we move off of it, as a matter, I mean, we've talked about the procedure in the district court. So the procedure on appeal, I suppose, not to put words in your opponent's mouth, but he didn't use these words like, well, this is unfair. Why not at least in your letter brief bring this to our attention so that there could have been a reply?
I actually did explicitly reference the Register of Actions in my letter response. And so at least I believe I read it this morning. I feel fairly certain I indicated that one should look at the Register of Actions.
Maybe I glossed over it myself, not being aware of what's in it, but I didn't.
But certainly, I do think even if you find that document submissions at the district court level inadequate, I still do believe that this court could take judicial notice of the record of conviction in this case.
Just to correct myself, you do make mention of, quote, register of actions, close quote, provides conclusive proof.
Right. And the reason that I referenced the register of actions is when I went to our file in the county attorney file, Ms. El-Naghdi had put in a copy of the register of actions that includes the case disposition that she got from our district court.
The process, though, for any judicial notice, well, is to find for the court to take judicial notice, because that gives the notice to the parties of what document I'm looking at, and then provide a copy, which, again, none of that happened here. And so it just strikes me that that is contrary to all of our civil rules, procedure, as well as evidence under judicial notice, to just assume the court looked at something that you've now looked at that wasn't brought up at a hearing and wasn't shown after a hearing, may have been referred to. But that's just like, we get this all the time in the TPR cases, of course, where we'll take judicial notice of the CHIPS, certain orders,
right,
from the CHIPS file, so they know which orders and there's a reference to it. And then, of course, that becomes part of our record of review. And so it just seems to me that though your surmise may be correct, it doesn't strike me as something we would consider.
And again, I don't think that the prosecutor that handled this case used the words, please take judicial notice of your own record. And I think that that's because she urged the court to look at its case file in this case.
Because the judicial notice rule applies to documents that aren't in the record, and you're saying this is in the record because it is in the record.
Yeah, it's the conviction. It is the public official record of this conviction is what the referee and the judge both had access to.
It's a public official, but not available to the defendant.
I am certainly very sympathetic to Mr. Wilson, because he showed me what he had this morning, and I don't have an explanation for why that happened. What I can tell you is it's the copy of the Register of Actions I have is not a private document. It is a public document. It is the document you go when you go to the district court records department in my county, you get this version of the Register of Actions.
It's not available electronically to the public.
It appears that it is not available electronically, but it is certainly available if you go in person to get the record.
Are there not courthouse computer terminals in every county courthouse, I think, where a person can access the electronic court records. I'm speaking just from general knowledge
generally
about our proceeding. But so I think it's possible, but but I'm not sure. But anyway, that may not
And I have absolutely no idea what a search of that database would look like, because I certainly didn't do it. I do want to make a couple other very quick points, which
Just to supplement the record, I mean, here at the Court of Appeals, we judges do not have access to I cannot get a register of actions if I want to, but I can ask a staff attorney to do it, and our access is limited, I think, as a matter of MJB policy to ensure that it's always used for proper purposes and people aren't roaming around. So anyway, we have limited, you know, certain authorized people who may search district court records. And so I've seen register of actions in lots of cases, but always when it's given to me by court staff at my request.
Certainly. And I want to make it clear, if your resolution to this case is that we go back to the district court and we submit a certified copy of this registers of actions to the same district court, we can do that. That's not a problem. We can submit this register of actions to this case, and that's fine. I do want to say I think it's unnecessary for the reasons I've already articulated, but also the warrant of commitment in this case, and I see my time is just about up, and I'm hoping I can finish
can
this
conclude,
thought.
Yeah.
It references count one in the complaint. That is offering a forged check over $2,500, and if, as Mr. Wilson suggests in the second part of his brief, that there had been some kind of an amendment and this had actually been sentenced at a different or lower level, like the level two guidelines offense, that would have indicated that it was an amended count one. That is another way that you can feel certain that the warrant of commitment that references count one in the complaint actually is referencing a dollar value that exceeds $2,500, because the clerk of courts in the district courts would have had to amend the complaint, and that would have been reflected on the warrant of commitment. So that is just another way you can know that we are actually dealing with a offense that is not statutorily eligible for expungement. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I don't think there's anything in the record to support opposing counsel's insinuation that if this was an amended count, there would necessarily be a reflection on A42 saying not count one, but amended count one. I've seen it both ways. I practice in district courts frequently. I don't think there's any rule that this court or opposing counsel could cite saying it would say amended count one.
Because if you amended the complaint, it would still be count one referenced. Is that what you're suggesting?
That's correct, Your Honor. And I don't think there's any internal policy, for example, if during the sentencing proceeding the parties just on the record informed the court that the state would be moving to amend count one, it would likely still be the same count of, or rather the statute of conviction. The issue, again, is the sentencing provision that's applicable. So they would be amending it from a conviction for 609-631-3, which this reflects, from the sentencing provision for parent two, to 4-3-A. That's not reflected anywhere on here. If they did, in fact, amend this to a different sentencing provision, the crime of conviction would stay the same. It's still 609-631-3, which is what's reflected on A42, regardless what the sentencing provision is, if this was amended. So I don't think that's dispositive. The second issue I'd like to briefly address is this idea of taking judicial notice of the register of actions. Judge Johnson, I think your point about the law clerk's letter is the entire point, which is that the record reviewed by the district court is included in everything following that email, A38 through A43. There's no register of actions in there. I think a collateral issue is if
there's a reference to case disposition and a representation by Ms. Burdoff that case disposition can mean nothing other than the registry, which is, I think she's probably accurate in the sense of judicial notice. Judicial notice regards documents that aren't part of the record, and if this is, in fact, the district court's record, her argument at least has some merit. What's your position?
Your Honor, two responses to that. The first is, I think case disposition could be meaning how the case was disposed. And the warrant of commitment is a reflection of how the case was disposed. It reflects that there was a plea to count one.
Not how the case was disposed. There's a reference to a thing, a case disposition, not a circumstance.
And I would argue this is a case disposition.
What is? Let me say it.
The warrant of commitment, the sentencing order from the judge, all of those could be part of a case disposition. We just don't know. And that's the problem, is we didn't know about this register of actions until today. And even still today, I don't know what the basis for the tiny notation on that register of actions saying what the sentencing provision was.
Mr. Wilson, I'm hearkening back to my district court days. Am I correct that in Mensis, a case disposition is entered by an administrative staff person who reads a commitment order and then adds the fields that will include the charge itself? So it's not a scanning of one document into one. It's populated. It someone has to enter it.
I don't know, Your Honor. I have no idea if that's the process for entering. I would defer to your district court days. But if that's the case, it does raise an additional question.
Prior to e-filing and all that we have, that strikes me as the way it was done. And sometimes it was real-time reporting where while you're entering a sentence, someone's also populating Mensis with it.
Certainly. And that does raise an additional question, which is what is the basis for the notation on the register of actions? How do we know that's accurate? How do we know that wasn't a typographical error? Because we don't have any other document on which we can rely conclusively to establish what the sentencing provision was that was applied in this case.
Why wouldn't the appropriate remedy, if you are correct, be at most, rather than a reversal, a remand to the district court to articulate clearly what it relied upon? I mean, it seems plausible to me, both arguments seem plausible to me, that when the district court says, or the law clerk, these are the documents we looked at, it may exclude what's actually already in the record, which is the district court's own registry. And also, you might be correct that it doesn't include that. Wouldn't the appropriate result be for the district court to clarify what it relied upon?
I think you need to go one step further, and I see my time is out, if I may respond.
You may finish
answering
questions.
I think you need to go one step further, Your Honor. I don't think you can simply remand it and say include the register of actions, because the register of actions is not going to be conclusive proof as to the sentencing provision. There is no basis in the record that still exists indicating what sentencing provision was applied here. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions today. We will take the matter under advisement, issue ruling within 90 days. Have a good day, each of you.